On this week's episode of Texas Scorecard Radio, we're recording live from the Texas Capitol for a very special episode covering Budget Night, the night where the Texas House of Representatives takes up the biennial budget for the state of Texas. We'll be joined by a number of guests talking about what's going on, breaking it down for you, and also what folks are hoping to achieve as the state decides how they spend your money. Welcome back, friends, to this special episode of Texas Scorecard Radio. No, I'm not in the 1836 studios. I'm at the Texas Capitol. I'm your host, Tony McDonald. I've got Brandon Walton's Capitol Bureau Chief for Texas Scorecard here. Basically, we're here to cover budget night, big night of the year.
Big night, right? It's the only bill the legislature's constitutionally obligated to pass. It's the state budget. And this year originates in the House. So the House of Representatives here in the Texas Capitol taking on the state's budget tonight. Plenty of opportunity for amendments and expected to be a very, very long debate.
Yeah, and so we're talking to different folks who are here participating in the debate. But basically, the House is taking up this appropriations bill, deciding how to fund government mm-hmm. for the next 2 years. Lots of amendments, opportunities for certain debates to go on about spending priorities, property tax relief, the things that we've been covering on the show over the past weeks. But the question is, will it materialize? Sometimes these things fizzle out.
Well, we'll have to wait and see as the night progresses. Ahead of filing, you had about 307 amendments pre-filed by members, and that's not including potential amendments to the amendment, which can drag things on. You got a lot of folks looking to do certain policy initiatives. You see some amendments out there for property tax relief, a big topic of this legislative session. You see other amendments dealing with things like border security. And I think you've got the big top line as well. People look at that number. The budget comes in at over $250 billion. It actually growing spending from the previous biennium by 16%. Keep in mind, population plus inflation is 8%, so about double that. So you've got a big spending budget, and you've got a lot of opportunity for conservatives to turn this budget into maybe something they could actually want to vote for at the end of the night.
Yeah. So far today, debate's been going on mm-hmm. for a few hours now. We've seen members going up and then kind of backing down, withdrawing amendments, kind of backing down from these fights. A lot of conflict that we would expect to happen fizzling out. Mm-hmm. Not unseen, but it seems like there's a lot more of that than you've seen in previous sessions.
It feels like a lot more. And talking to some lawmakers who are on the floor today, apparently there's been a big movement from the new leadership in the Texas House to try to move through this quickly, to try to get as few record votes as possible, and to try to make it controversy-free, essentially.
Yeah, basically trying to minimize debate, yeah. And that's kind of the problem here is debate is what's necessary if you want to advance and build momentum for some cause, like increasing property tax relief or something along those lines. We'll continue to keep an eye on it as the night progresses, but thanks for your input, Brandon.
Absolutely.
Next, I wanted to pull in our friends John Sego and Emily Horn with Texas Right to Life. Y'all are a group, you're a grassroots group advocating on the life issue, the largest pro-life organization in Texas. And I thought, your experience, the things y'all are working on with the budget are a really good example for folks back home of like how important this process, this night of the year or this night of the 2 years really is.
Yeah, absolutely. A lot of people, when they think of our issue, they look at the big bills that are standalone, independent bills that get to the floor, that all the crowds come out for,
And big protests, rallies, marches, parades.
Yep. Right. But some of the biggest pro-life victories we've had in the last 10 years have been on the budget. And so we pay a really close attention to the budget. We work on amendments. We work on riders. And we've had some great historic successes to defund the bad guys and fund good programs, and then getting in some policies about how we spend our money and with pro-life policies and pro-life principles. So it's a huge night. So yeah, leading up to this, this is a big, big night for the pro-life movement in Texas.
Now, let's talk real quick. Y'all have had some success this evening. One of your big priorities was getting funding for the Alternatives to Abortion program. Emily, tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, that was a really, really great moment for us. We got some increased funding for the Alternatives to Abortion program. And this is a program that's been around for about 15 years. It funds pregnancy centers, adoption agencies, and maternity homes, essentially to make sure that when a woman does choose life, we are doing something to help her. We are not just wishing her well and shutting the door in her face.
Sure.
So a lot of your listeners, a lot of people around the state, a lot of our grassroots political activists, they know about these pregnancy centers in their area, in their communities, their church might support them, they may volunteer for a pregnancy center, and they help women deal with the crisis in their lives that's making them question whether or not to continue their pregnancy. So they are life-saving, life-affirming centers, and what this does is it funds a lot of these community pregnancy centers and helps them grow and expand their operations and reach more women that are ultimately in a crisis situation. The maternity home aspect is really awesome, too, because some women do find themselves without a place to stay if they are pregnant, and it gives them housing as they seek to figure out their next move.
So it's basically funding for programs that affirm life. There's life-affirming decisions, and then there's affirmation of those decisions and helping to support women who are in those situations and need that help. The interesting thing here is the strategy that's involved. So you have legislators who are on the Texas Right to Life team who kind of support and carry amendments for your organization who go in there and ended up being able to draw funding extra funding for IT service. There was some tell us about that, John.
Yeah, so we every session we have to come up with a strategy because as soon with the budget, it's such a big political fight that all the amendments have to be pre-filed.
Sure.
So at least 2 days before the bill is heard, there's a deadline to file all your.
So you're kind of putting your cards on the table, and
right,
the other side, is very well funded and has lots of lobbyists and everybody, too. So they're showing up to fight it, right?
Yeah. So what we do is we come up with a strategy to make sure have the best position and our champions who are going to be on the floor, like Jonathan Stickland, like Matt Krause, that these guys are ready and they have all the tools they need that are pre-filed so they can negotiate and they can, get the bad guys to stand down and get leadership to take this issue seriously. So we had this session, for example, we had three amendments to fund the program.
Yeah, so you're looking for a pot of money to give a pot of money to pull from that's going to go into this Alternatives to Abortion funding.
Yeah, there are a lot of rules and there are a lot of limitations on where you can take money from. And so we had to look at where are the big pots of money, where is government overspending. An agency asked for a certain amount of money and for some reason the Appropriations Committee gave them 600% more than what they asked for. And so we look at that kind of stuff. We do the details, the research, and then we're saying, oh, okay, we'll take that extra money.
Yeah.
So our conservatives say, hey, we have a good case of why the money can come out of that program. And we have to do different targets because there's all these rules, all these laws that are, and so you could hit a speed bump on the floor and you got to have backups and then backups to the backups.
And so you had success earlier this evening on the floor with conservative Republican members coming in saying, hey, there's this extra money over here in this, IT program that we don't need. Here's these people who need support, a real important function of government of saving and protecting lives. We're going to take that money from that place. We're going to put it in this other. And so you've had an increase. What was the numbers? I mean, I know y'all increased it. There was some money in the budget for the Alternatives to Abortion program, but you were able to.
Right.
How much were you able to increase that?
So the program was at $38.4 million for the last budget, which as your listeners may or may not know, that's a two-year budget cycle. So it's $38.4 million total. But for the next 2 years, you were looking at the program needing to grow. There were some providers that weren't able to join the program because they had maxed out. We've really reached our capacity of what we're able to fund. And there's more great providers that want to come on the program, and there's areas that we need to serve that are not being adequately served in our state. So the increase tonight increases the program budget for 2 years up to $90 million, which was a huge, huge victory. We were very excited about that.
Yeah. So the process here, like, you know, citizens out there, there's lots of folks listening who care about the life issue. And obviously they can get involved through Texas Right to Life, but there's other causes and other issues. I mean, the process here basically starts with building a rapport with these members of the legislature, getting supporters, advocates who are going to go and fight for these things, giving them the tools, and then, you know, putting them into the arena to go and win these battles, right?
Absolutely. A lot of our guys on the floor, a lot of our great pro-life Republicans, they want to help. They want to do, you know, what they can to help the pro-life cause and the pro-life issue. And a lot of what Texas Right to Life does is identify what the most pressing priorities are and do as much as we can to make sure that we're not asking them to do to max out their office capacity and their staff when we could be doing that work ourselves. So we try to queue up the team because we can't actually be on the floor, and so they're more than willing to go help us and kind of, you know, swing the battle.
You have to, yeah, you almost wish you could get down there and engage in the debate yourself, but you have to train these there. You have to train these people, you know, okay, hand the ball off, and then you trust that they'll be able to carry it forward. Well, some of the interesting, we were talking about this earlier, how valuable this opportunity through the budget is from a grassroots organization that has widespread popular support. Government acts through money, right? Mm-hmm. It acts through its spending. And so, you know, in the past, you've done these things to limit funding to Planned Parenthood, to say, okay, we're not going to let money go to abortion providers, but then also to ensure that, hey, when we are spending money, it's going to causes that are good. This is prime time for actually forcing votes and forcing issues to a head for the life issue.
Yeah, and I'll give you an example on that one. You know, everybody says we want to defund Planned Parenthood. Almost every Republican going to a door asking for a vote is going to say, yeah, of course we should defund Planned Parenthood. Well, the devil's in details, and you've got to have a team that can actually help these reps. They say we want to do that, but they don't have time to dig through the budget. They don't have time to make, you know, requests of HHSC to go through contracts to see where Planned Parenthood exactly is getting money from. So they would file a rider that cuts out Planned Parenthood from this program over here. Well, then whenever we would do more research in the interim, we would say, oh, Planned Parenthood, they got their tentacles on this other program after all of our research and digging. And so we were able to say, hey, you know, we got to expand that language. We got to change that language till finally we got a great budget rider passed last session that said the entire budget, you know, put some rules, some strong pro-life language on the entire budget. And so that's something that the grassroots don't have time to do because they're actually, you know, working a real job.
Sure,
they're
sure.
taking care of.
But
you know.
But you're here as representing the grass tops, if you will, where you're representing all of these grassroots voices who join in your organization and who care about this issue. You're kind of putting that effort out there on the ground and putting it into action here in the Capitol.
Well, it's delivering on what they want. I mean, all these Republican voters want this, and we're here to make sure, A, the politicians actually do what they promised, but then, B, helping those good guys actually be effective and be efficient in what they're doing. They could pass a rider that looks good on paper but has no impact.
Sure.
And that's one way we help them with the background information and making sure it's drafted. And so that's actually one thing we're waiting for, Tony, now for this evening, is we have an amendment to fix something technical at the end of the budget to, you know, strengthen that defunding language. And it's something that no representative would have thought of unless we brought it to their attention.
Sure.
That there's still a little loophole.
As an expert, you're seeing this opportunity. Well, it's just the truth of the matter. If we look at the left out there, universally, they're funded by government. They always have tax money being channeled to them. That's how they get their funding. And so as a right of center conservative groups out there want to get engaged in the process and they go toe to toe with opponents, this is the arena, because you have to cut off the funding for your opponents and ensure that when it's appropriate and in the role of government, that the funding goes to the causes that y'all care about. Thank you so much for joining me. I think it's really good insight, and I appreciate the work y'all do here in the Capitol and out on the streets in Texas.
Absolutely. Thanks, Tony.
Thanks, Tony.
Texas Scorecard Radio is a project of Empower Texans. At texasscorecard.com or empowertexans.com, you can find more news and daily updates from all around the Lone Star State. You can also find updates from Empower Texans and Texas Scorecard on Facebook and Twitter, and follow Empower Texans on Instagram. Texas Scorecard's News Digest goes out weekly via email and monthly in print. Subscribe online and find more information at empowertexans.com. Someone's always keeping score. We think it ought to be the taxpayers.
Now I'm joined by Texas Scorecard Capital correspondent Destin Sinski. It's been a couple hours since we sat down with Brandon and with the Right to Life folks. The vote on the budget is now taking place. I guess what can we say about it? It fizzled out, the debate tonight. Our joke would be all the controversy was moved to Article 11 for those who are watching tonight. Basically, everything that was potentially controversial, where there was conflict between Republicans and Democrats, where there was conflict between taxpayers and, you know, the spendocrats, all of it was basically kicked down the road.
That's exactly right. Tony, you know, it started off kind of slow. People were kind of getting their bearings right. And then things really picked up for a while there. Lawmakers were asking for record votes and trying to put lawmakers on the record and making sure everybody understood that these were votes that we were going to take seriously and that we were giving a lot of attention to, we'd prepared for. And then all of a sudden, the fire kind of started dwindling and the wind kind of left everybody's sails, right? People were ready to get the night over with. This is drawn out for way too long. We're starting to make bad deals in order to get out in a timely manner. It was really bizarre. I don't know how much we as conservatives have to show for it. Kind of a disappointment, I think, for a lot of folks.
Now, I've got Jonathan Stickland, State Representative Jonathan Stickland from Bedford, teed up. And he's going to come and join us and give a little bit of an insider's perspective of, you know, hey, what happened? But from an outsider's perspective, I think you're right. It's a perspective of disappointment. We knew going in that this was a budget that was not fiscally responsible, basically growing government double the rate of population plus inflation, 16% versus 8%,
sure,
or more. And it was odd. It was some people describing it as almost like a Twilight Zone-esque situation where folks would bring amendments, they'd want to talk about them, but then they would say, oh, well, we'll move it to this Article 11 thing. But tell people, listeners at home, they may have been watching or following this. What does that mean?
Yeah, it's kind of the joke of the evening, right? Like, well, we're not sure what we want to do, so we'll just Article 11 and come back to it later. And so I think what people need to understand, our listeners back home, is, you know, Article 11 is basically, hey, we'll circle back to this. Leadership will have a say. And if we've brokered some sort of a deal, you'll have to take our word for it. And, you know, we'll deliver on whatever promise we gave you in order to put it off, right?
So I mean, to put it in context, you have the budget. It's originating in the Texas House this
right.
session, House Bill 1. It's going to be it's voted out of the chamber this evening, goes over to the Senate. The Senate is going to substitute their budget into it, which is more fiscally responsible so far, but probably not good enough, certainly lacking in certain departments when it comes to property tax relief. They're going to substitute that in, and then there's going to be a conference committee
yep.
where these folks are going to get together and they're going to negotiate. And so the idea of a lot of what went on this evening was, oh, well, we'll put this provision in the budget in the Article 11, something's called the wish list,
right?
So that it might potentially somehow be taken up later on by this conference committee. But it seems really unlikely that anything gained in that is going to be, it's going to stick around, going to be permanent.
Sure. And I think, you know, for a lot of people, just the way that this session has transpired so far, you know, as you mentioned, that Senate version of the budget is under the Texas conservative budget by the skin of its teeth, right?
Sure.
I mean, just barely. And so now you have this House budget that's been finalized, greatly exceeding that. And so you kind of have a floor and then this really high ceiling, and you know that lawmakers are going to probably arrive somewhere in the middle, and it just doesn't look good for, you know, the nature in which our revenues, our taxpayer dollars are going to be spent this time, for that very reason. And, you know, I think based on what we saw tonight, conservatives struggled to do what they set out to do, and was take this thing that, you know, in the House side starts a little bit above, and we can rein it in and bring it back and make it more conservative and get to a place where these lawmakers can support it, and that just never really happened. It didn't transpire.
Yeah, I mean, it's not something that is totally foreign. We've seen this in previous sessions. Absolutely. Where debate will get cut off after a certain amount of time. The reality is, and I've seen this in conventions and other bodies, you've got a large group of people, they basically, you know, are apathetic. They don't care. They don't actually care about whether the thing gets modified, amended, changed. They want to just move it forward in the process and then see what happens. And so they're ready to kick the can down the road. But what was odd was to see the minorities, and I'm talking about both the conservative minority but also the Democrats,
right?
You know, basically saying, okay, well, we're just going to give up on having the debate about the ideas and about the issues and the changes that they want in the process. We're just going to give up on that,
right?
Very weird.
So you have conservatives and Democrats who, you know, about halfway through the evening, the fight was no longer worth having, right? Lawmakers are super short-sighted, politicians are. And so they have these one or two things that they're really shooting for. They'd love to grab these one or two things. And as the night kind of drew on, it was like, oh, man, this is just – it's more work than I thought I was going to have to put in. The night is drawn on. You know, the societal pressure of the peer pressure of the people around me. We need to get this done. Let's get out of here. This is a win. It just it mounted up on lawmakers, and I don't know how else to describe it other than that.
Yeah, one of the things that we were looking at in this process, you've got a new speaker, Speaker Dennis Bonin, mm-hmm. Replacing outgoing Speaker Joe Strauss. The question is, are we going to be more Republican, more conservative? But also just, what is the style going to be like? Is it going to be different? Two things, one good, one bad, and I think the bad probably outweighs the good. It seemed like there was a commitment to following the rules and less abuse of the rules.
Sure.
And abuse of the process in this budget debate. And that was good. So it was good to see that change. But there seems to be even more social pressure in the body to say, oh, well, we have to avoid conflict. The conflict is a bad thing. And I think for those of us who watch the process, we say conflict's essential. It's about having the debate and advancing and building momentum for a cause. And that was what was so bizarre about Sure. What we saw tonight.
Absolutely. I think, you couldn't have said it or wrapped it up any better than that, Tony. And, you know, session will continue to go on. We'll loop back to this and see how things kind of end.
Yeah, so we'll have to keep an eye on things and see how, you know, conservatives and taxpayers continue to engage in the process, because it isn't the end of the day.
Sure.
We're about halfway through the session. We'll take a closer look at this as we get closer through the conference process. And, of course, now we've got Jonathan Stickland here to join us to give an insider's perspective. What happened? It kind of felt like the fight kind of fizzled out there at the end.
Yes, it's been a long day and most definitely frustrated with the whole process and the day. I think it was a bad day for conservatives, and I hope it's not a foreshadowing of the rest of the session or the final version of the budget.
So at the end of the night, there was a unanimous vote to move the budget forward. What's the deal? I know there was a lot of opposition and concern about the spending growth contained in this budget. Why did you and other, you know, more conservative-leaning members of the House vote for this budget?
I think it was definitely a strategic decision, knowing that this is most certainly not the final version of the budget and actually didn't appropriate any money at this point in the process. And this was a hope that we can still be a part of what the final budget looks like. I know the Freedom Caucus in particular has been spending a lot of time on a press release that is going out right after this budget, marking what has to happen in the final version. During the next couple of weeks, it'll be going to conference committee. It'll be debated with the Senate. And we're trying to lay out our clear priorities to let them know where our lines in the sand are on the final version of the budget.
So at the end of the night on the budget, there was a motion to basically cut off debate, debate on a bunch of the amendments that dealt with some of the bigger ticket items, such as cutting spending and moving that to property tax relief, those sorts of things.
Right.
What happened there?
Well, I actually had four amendments that I was waiting to have come up. And so what we saw tonight in the budget process was the leadership team really taking control. And for the first time, so this is my fourth budget process that I've been through, the focus was really on just demeaning the entire process of this day. If you saw, almost every amendment was either withdrawn or sent to Article 11, which all of us know Article 11 is where bills go to die. It's just a way of saying, oh, look what I did. But the truth is, it really didn't do anything.
It's the same thing as basically losing the fight on an amendment.
Right.
If the amendment were defeated and not adopted, it's basically the same thing as if it's moved.
Well, and that's the frustrating thing, because some of the items that were sent to Article 11 were good things, and some of them were bad things. And frankly, what moving into Article 11 did was really remove our ability to have a record vote on that actual issue.
It forestalled the debate and the opportunity to actually have a debate, have a discussion, have a vote about things like cutting across the board through the budget to fund greater property tax.
Right. So someone could have a budget amendment, and they present the amendment, and then without having a vote on the amendment, could make a motion to move it to Article 11, where it's essentially dead, and there never be a vote on that actual amendment.
And so what it seemed like,
it circumvented the public's ability to know where people actually stand and to have debate on any of the issues.
And so effectively what it seemed like is a majority, a large, vast majority of the members, Republicans and Democrats alike, were wanting to avoid having those debates where the public could see where they stand on those issues, like greater property tax relief.
So of the four, absolutely, of the four budget processes I've been a part of, this one had the least amount of votes that I've ever seen, by far. Just watching it all unfold, this was planned and I think micromanaged from the start. I know the pressure on members to withdraw amendments, for instance, and work together rather than actually give them the ability to fight for their district or for their constituents or their principals. It was very clear that they wanted no real discussion. In fact, in the places where there were discussion, the few places, it was really diminished by the fact that everyone there was this feeling of like, this is all irrelevant. There's going to be a couple of people appointed to the budget committee, and they're going to go, and they're going to decide what the final product is.
Yeah, and I think
and I'll be honest, Tony, so this is where it became clear to me as an individual member, one out of 150, that what happened tonight did not seem to have any impact at all. So rather than throwing up a protest, what I would consider a protest no vote, which I can tell you if this was the final actual appropriation of the money, I would have been a no. I felt like it would have sent a louder message for us to say, all right, we'll vote yes. This is all kabuki theater to begin with. However,
I think I disagree with that.
I know you disagree, but I want to finish my point.
Sure.
For me, the biggest thing that conservatives need to look at are the few record votes that we actually had. There were some separation. We got a chance for some people to pick a side and where they stand on the issue. But number three, you've got to look at that statement that was put out by the Freedom Caucus. And that, I think, is going to hopefully send a louder message to the press, to the people, and the members of this leadership team, that if they want conservatives to put their stamp on the real budget vote, they have a lot of work to do to get there.
Well, appreciate you joining us and sharing a few thoughts about what went on this evening, and certainly we'll keep an eye on the budget process as it moves forward.
Thanks.
What are you doing Sunday evening? With the Texas legislative session back in full swing, we're spending our Sundays making sure you are staying informed with Sunday Scorecard, a product of Texas Scorecard TV. Catch the Texas Scorecard team and guests every Sunday at 7:30 p.m. live on the Empower Texans Facebook page to hear the latest news from Austin, D.C., or even your local city governments. That's Sunday Scorecard, live, Sundays at 7:30 p.m. throughout the legislative session. You can find show archives and more information at texasscorecard.com. Join the conversation this Sunday evening.
Well, that's all I have for you this week. We'll be back in the studio next week for another episode of Texas Scorecard Radio.
Texas Scorecard Radio is brought to you each week as a public service from the Empower Texans Foundation and in partnership with the Lincoln Institute and this station. You can download podcasts from each program and learn more at empowertexans.com.